a sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rehm, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on December 15, 1991, in the series God With Us, entitled In the Wonder of Worship. The scripture readings are Isaiah 6, verses 1 through 9, and Luke 1, verses 5 through 14, and 67 through 75. The texts for the sermon are Isaiah 6, verse 1, and Luke 1, verses 73 through 75. Copyright, Grand Valley State University.
Emmanuel, God is with us. That is the theme of our worship in Advent and Christmas this year. And it is the truth that I hope will be written deeply upon the hearts and minds of us all. For if we have the assurance that God is with us, that is enough. Then there is nothing that we cannot face. Then we can live with a kind of security that will free us to live with a kind of abandon that will enable us to live fully and richly, realizing the potential with which we have been created. God with us. And in these weeks, God's presence in the various contexts of our life. Today, God with us in this setting, in the wonder of worship. In the moment in which we present ourselves before God and raise our arms beckoning heaven to come to earth and to touch our lives. Over the past couple of decades, worship has been a strong center in this community. This experience has been the generating center that has enlivened our whole life and ministry. And so, as a Christ Community family, we are no strangers to worship. We have known time and again those moments in which together we were lost in wonder, love, and praise, and knew our lives connected, knew our lives touched by grace. And whether we went out of here with any clear statement of a text or the sermon or a hymn or a prayer, we went out of here nonetheless knowing that there had been that connection, that earth and heaven had met for a moment. God with us in the wonder of worship. And as we reflect on that this morning, I've asked Colette if she would reflect with me in your presence about the presence of God in the wonder of worship, because in a rather unique way in Christ's community, that which happens in the adult community and that which is happening with the children even now is one concerted effort, one intentionality that adult and children would experience God with us and in the wonder of worship. Colette, you have a wonderful story from your friend Gertrude Mueller Nelson, who was with us a year ago, a story that speaks of worship better than my rambling words.
I don't know about better. But she talks about her young daughter, Annika, who was about 3 at the time. And Gertrude was evidently working on some wonderful project with many bright colored scraps of fabric, which were falling the excess into the wastebasket. And Annika came over and plucked them out and disappeared. like any good parent, after about 20 minutes of total silence, she decided to check. And she found Annika in the backyard, having taken a long stick and lots of tape, and having taped all those little fabric scraps to that stick, and she was walking around the backyard rather slowly. And Gertrude asked her what she was doing, and she said, "Oh, I'm making a procession so that God will come down and dance with me." A beckoning, a child's beckoning, that probably is metaphor for the child within us that still beckons God to come and be with us.
And I like that story because we talk about the focus of worship being God and therefore a certain objective nature to worship. But we can be really rather stuffy about that. I wonder how many of us would keep coming back week after week after week if this was just an exercise to offer worship to God. How many of us would keep coming back unless in the offering of ourselves and the beckoning of that other one, there was not the response in our lives, so that something was happening in us as well. She wanted God to come down and dance with her, and we need God to come and dance with us, to touch our lives, so that it's kind of an ellipse. And I don't know whether it begins here or here. Obviously, initially, God has encountered us, but then in that encounter, we respond, and then in that response, we hear again, as Isaiah in the lesson that we read. The king had died, a time perhaps of national crisis and maybe personal loss, and Isaiah went into the temple, and it was just about blown away. I saw the Lord high and lifted up, and his train filled the temple, and he heard the angels and saw the vision and felt himself unworthy, and then experienced the cleansing, the forgiving, the grace of this awesome God. And at that point heard God's call, "Whom shall I send?" And his response, "Here am I, send me." And so there's that intercourse between heaven and earth, that back and forth. And while God is the object or the subject of our worship, something's got to happen here as well. And it is that experience of God in the wonder of worship that enables us to leave here knowing that God is with us. But there's another story, the story of...
There is. And I'm thinking that it connects in the sense that that happens, but it doesn't really happen without any structure. I mean, there's a sense in which leaders of worship are aware that they need to structure those moments to be moments, and we can't deny that. We can't act as though we can just walk into any space and it'll happen. Sometimes it may, but on a regular basis, we've developed forms. And she has another story that, again, I think is more metaphor that makes it visual for us. She says that she was at the Pacific Ocean. She lives in California. And she saw a young family come to the beach, a daughter and two little boys. And she said they did what she'd seen many a children do, and that's kind of cling to their mother in fear as those enormous waves began crashing on the beach in front of them. And then she said the little girl did something that really was a ritual moment. She turned her back on what was too awesome for her to face fully, and she dug a small, small hole in the sand in which some of the horrendous sea could fill, but a manageable part, one that she could splash about in delightedly with her brothers. And from time to time, that ocean would come and wash out the walls of that sand castle that they had built. And maybe that's something we need to note as well. They would rebuild then and find that manageable sea. But we need structures. We need ways to beckon God, and ways in which we feel somewhat safe. Because God is an awesome God.
So what we're doing here with prayers and with responses and with hymns and all are the forms that shape the puddle. And we hope the ocean will break in and that the puddle will be a puddle indeed, and that, that we'll be able to dabble in that puddle and feel the refreshment of the mighty ocean, knowing that, that we can never take in, never comprehend, never even apprehend the awesomeness of that holy other one. But yet in our worship, in those moments, in these structures, there is that opportunity to be touched and to know that we are connected and that God is with us. You know, Colette, I suppose one of the most revolutionary insights for me in the last couple of years, really, and it has come with your coming or my discovery of the worship center, and therefore the desire to have you come and do that thing here, is that just as orange juice isn't just for breakfast anymore, worship isn't just for adults anymore. And the worship center is revolutionary in that it creates the experience of worship as the means and the medium through which the child is nurtured. And when I was a kid, long time ago, it was, you know, you sat on these little chairs and you had these wonderful teachers, and their philosophy was ram it in, cram it in, children's heads are hollow. Ram it in, cram it in, there's more to follow. And we'd sit there and we would be abused for 30 minutes or 45, a can of squirms, and then you would go home and your mother would say, well, what did you learn today? And one day I said, well, we learned about how this General Moses led the Corps of Engineers to the Red Sea and built a pontoon bridge, and Israel went over, and then they blew the bridge up and the Egyptians were all drowned. And my mother said, that's not the way they told you the story. I said, Mom, if I told you what they told me, you'd never believe that. Well, that isn't really quite the way it happened. But the point is, there were always facts, you know, and it was a cognitive experience. It was a classroom. But now tell us about Worship Center and sort of how that evolved and your part in that.
Well, Worship Center, it is a different emphasis. The cognitive, the desire to know facts. I mean, once that printing press comes and we can hold a whole Bible in our hands, we somehow think we're supposed to know every part of it. The woman that I learned about Worship Center from, Sophia Cavalletti, said once that, you know, it's not such a great need to know all those facts. To know a few well and deeply are enough for a lifetime, at least this lifetime. So Worship Center pulled away from what had begun really at the turn of the century with the Sunday school method and our whole understanding of how children learn and so wanting to capitalize on that. The whole kind of transition through the Enlightenment period and the scientific reasoning, where we're feeling like we can find an answer to everything. And suddenly we wake up, and my generation is part of that, and we think, oh, we're missing something. We're missing some sense of how to deal with mystery. I think scientists themselves have come back and touched that sooner than the rest of us who were trailing behind him.
I remember your story about seeing the Good Shepherd with Jerome Berryman and what that did for you.
I entered seminary full of doubts and questions and wanting provable facts to the quest that I was on for faith in God. And saw Jerome Berryman, who had learned his method from Sophia Cavalletti, do a gold box parable and tell the story of the Good Shepherd. That's all he did, was tell the story of the Good Shepherd in kind of planograph figures on the floor. Some of you have seen us do that. And as he told the story of how the shepherd stood between the wolf and the sheep and would even give his life for the sheep, I suddenly understood something deeper than I ever had about atonement. And it did kind of an end run around all my cognitive questions, and I realized I was in the midst of my answer. I don't know that it was the answer, but it was the way. And it was story, and it was an instinctive response in me to delight in the wonder of that truth.
You didn't get an answer, you had an experience.
I had an experience. That's exactly
and
right.
And worship as nurture is the creation of an experience where children will go home. Don't say, what did you learn? Say, did you experience God today?
What was the best moment today? That kind of
so that in that worship center, the worship, just like here, becomes a medium and holds the possibility of the moment when the life is touched. And to be touched by God is to be transformed. Colette, you sneaked in here as a minister for children, but I soon discovered I had a theologian on my hands. And probably no one has ever pressed me more sharply than you, and made me think in terms of the child and in terms of that experience, because I can tend sometimes to get cognitive. You don't have to confirm that. But in your own experience, you have always quested, you've been steeped in the tradition, you've loved the tradition, but you have always fought the tradition. Now, how are you dealing with that with our children?
I think something I my parents tell me I was born asking why, but certainly that was cultivated in my home. And I began to realize that what I want more than anything else for my children, which is where most of our journeys always begin, do they not, with some kind of very close personal motivation. What I wanted for them and what I want for all children that I encounter is their ability to ask the right question. Much more important than knowing one right answer. How to ask the question, because it's through the question that they begin to own something, that they begin to shape and mold with the materials of old and make a new vessel that will carry them in to futures and experiences that we can't prepare them for. So questioning was so important, and then whenever we tell the stories, we try to end or have moments during the day when we model for the children. I wonder what this is about. I wonder what that. No pat answers, no morals at the end of our stories, but a modeling of a wondering. As the children grow older, we find they're able to dialogue back with that. So that's been a key, and also an openness. Tradition is so important. It links us with the past. But if it's not something that's simply a guide and a pointer, if it becomes an iron cage, it'll strangle us.
Would it be fair to say that your intention is to tradition the children to have a way to go which is open-ended so that it can remain alive?
There's not a particular tradition that we teach them that has to stay, but we teach them the tools of our tradition.
I promised Carl Lundgren that I had a Swedish story. This is a Swedish story. Peter and Colette and I spent a day in Muskegon in October at an interfaith dialogue between David Hartman, a rabbi from Jerusalem, and Christer Stendahl, a New Testament scholar. It was a marvelous day. And Christer Stendahl, whose roots are Swedish, talked about tradition and about how tradition can become traditionalism or can become the iron cage that you mentioned. And I just thought this was absolutely wonderful, because it is what my ministry has been about all these 20 years that I have been in this congregation. Christer said, there is a museum tradition and then there is a living tradition. Now, he said, if you would like to have an example of a museum tradition, you go with me to Minnesota, to my Swedish friends in Minnesota, with a lutefisk and all. And he said, there you will see the Swedish Americans who have kept alive the Swedish tradition. And he said, when I meet these people, it's like meeting an Americanized version of my grandparents. But he said, the tradition that they've kept alive, which is so delightful, is a museum tradition. He said, if you want to know the living Swedish tradition, you've got to go to Sweden. Now, I can remember as a kid growing up, some of my Dutch friends and family and so on would go to the Netherlands and they'd come home scandalized why we Dutch Calvinists in Western Michigan were so pious and so straight. And we came over here in the 19th century and built walls high and tried to protect this thing as it was and to freeze the tradition. They went over to the Netherlands and found out it wasn't anything like that at all, because their life had continued to go on. And actually, Dutch society has always been kind of on the edge, at the growing edge. And so I could identify with what Christer said. And then he used the example of a snake. So you know, a snake occasionally sort of moves out of its skin, and its skin continues there. And he said the scientists then, they run up to the skin, and they measure the skin, and they feel the skin, and they take the texture of the skin, and they talk about the skin, and analyze the skin, and then they stuff the skin, and put it in a glass case, and say, there's the snake. It's not the snake. The snake's wriggling off some other place. That's a museum piece. Now, you know, for 20 years, I have been trying to find the way in this setting to take the tradition and translate the tradition so that it could be transmitted as a living tradition. Stendhal made this comment, and it is profound. Tradition is an instrument for continuity and change. Oh, if we could just learn that. Now, what I sense you're doing in the worship center, you're traditioning children, and you're giving them continuity with the great Christian tradition, but you are preparing them for being able to negotiate life and change as it will, and a kind of open-endedness.
And to be open to a variety of mediums of that. One of the most wonderful things about coming here is that while I was out there kind of working on the development of the program and trainings and things, you were here shaping that congregation. When we came together, it was at a point in time where I had begun to realize that this wonderful crucible I'd been developing for children was being done in communities where when they walked out of that door and upstairs, they met something entirely different than what I was teaching them to enjoy. But here at Christ Community, you've been very willing to be eclectic, to be willing to step out of the traditional severity of the Reformed mode, and to have dance, and to have music, and to have a variety of music, the classical music, the contemporary music, the variety of sounds and mixes, whatever creates moments for people is permissible and is our responsibility to mold into that new clay of the future.
And again, for me, the exciting thing is that the word for me this year is integration. That everything we do in this congregation reinforces everything else. And we are actually doing that this year in a very concrete way. Colette, say a word about the curriculum that you're writing and how that has integrated with preaching and teaching and so forth.
Well, I you were interrupt because you're as able to say this as I am, but there was a sense in which I have been developing and writing for a lower level of worship center for several years, 5 or 6 now, and it's time to move on to the 3rd, 4th, and 5th grade, which we've been doing a couple of years. And to my delight, I arrive here, and I have, for very intentional reasons, and reasons you might not suspect, they're not typical ones, chosen not to get the Masters of Divinity. But I do sense the need when I am writing curriculum for one who has experience in that area, one whose philosophy of it I respect, and I find that here in Dick, and we have been able to write this curriculum together. And what I'm excited about is that this is not the goal, but I think it may be publishable when we're finished. And the reason is because we are incorporating the concept of worship center, which means worship, And the stories were being very particular about what we lift up. And it's a needed curriculum because we are moving into generations of children who don't know all the stories. And they really can't learn all of them. They come to us once a week. They aren't fed it maybe in other situations. We need to lift up the stories that give us the thread of faith and know that well. And we've been doing that together. You've been helping me with understanding the theology, which gives me the words. And now we're sharing it with parents on a Sunday morning situation. Because I know that for a lot of you, as it was for me, how do we pass on that faith? How do we pass on our sense of love of worship? And in that setting, we can show the stories the children see and then talk about them at deeper levels and come to a questing and searching of our own journey, maybe that we've left behind at the end of Sunday school. But we need to know what we think in order to answer our children's questions with integrity and in a way that they won't have to unlearn things. That is, again, open-ended.
I want to say that the hard work is writing that stuff and writing it just right, and Colette is doing that, and it is quite a task. Our children have our own curriculum, and that is really something. And as I have been able to consult on that, it has given me a way for preaching, so that there have been Sundays when what I have preached, the children have heard down below, and then we were able to go up to Growing Up in Grace and discuss with parents so that they could go home with their children and talk about it further. And meeting with parents and grandparents in Growing Up in Grace, for me, has given me access to a part of the community that I just simply have never had access to, and it is really exciting. And to draw this to a close, let me just say that for us as adults and for our children, we are being ushered into the experience of worship as the medium in which we experience the presence. And if, as I began, we simply have that experience, we have enough to get through another week, come what may, because God is with us.
In the wonder of worship.
Thank God.